Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from beautiful Pueblo, Colorado, on this 14th day of July, 2009. Today, we have the great honor of talking with filmmaker Amin Matalka, whose terrific movie, Captain Abu Rudd, is Jordan's entry for the 2009 Oscar race. It's a wonderful film, folks, that's already earned numerous awards at various film festivals. The story focuses on an elderly widowed janitor at an airport who's mistaken for an airline pilot by the children in his neighborhood and then charms them with adventure tales about his imaginary journeys. Then, when his pretense is discovered, he still tries to help these children, even at great cost to his own safety. Also here with us today is A.J. Hockery, one of our favorites, also known as the Mad Movie Man, and as most of our regular listeners know, among AJ's many duties is serving as the editor and lead critic for Passport Cinema, a website devoted strictly to foreign language films, and it's a pleasure to have him as a guest host on today's show. Happily, our distinguished producer and co-host are here too, so before bringing our guests on, let's see if Nikki Starr and Jazz Shaw are ready to get things rolling. Hey Nikki, is everything working in our chat room?
Hi Betty Jo, yes, everything's ready to go.
Excellent, and thanks to you Nikki for taking care of our chatters, and thanks to everyone who signed in for the chat, as well as to all our other listeners. Jazz, are you looking forward to hearing more about Captain Abu Rudd?
I've been waiting.
And eagerly waiting, and I'm glad to hear that, Jazz. Because you and AJ will be asking most of the questions today, since I plan to be more of a moderator and call on each of you for questions. So speaking of AJ, I'd like to welcome him back to our show. Hi, AJ.
Hi, Betty Jo. How's it going?
Going fine. It's always going fine when you agree to be on our show. And what have you been up to lately?
Oh, not much. Just last week I received some great news that I'm going to be joining you and a number of other great critics in the Online Film Critics Society. I've finally been accepted after 10 years of applying.
Well, you never give up, and I think they finally realized the error of their ways and brought you in to kind of give the organization even more class. But I know you and Jazz are eager to hear from Amin, so now it's my very great pleasure to welcome him to our show. Congratulations on your amazing film, Amin.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show, Betty Jo.
You're very welcome, and I understand this is your first full-length feature movie, is that right?
Yeah, that's my first feature film.
I can hardly believe that, because I just can't tell you how much I loved this movie, and in fact, after watching it, I have a new, a favorite new film hero, and it's your title character, and I'm telling Zorro and Spider-Man and all those others to move over, because I think that Captain Abu Rudd is really the most courageous of the heroes in the movie. But I know Jazz and AJ, I want to ask you some questions about
your
movie.
Thanks for the lovely review, by the way, I have to say. It's lovely. Thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. I just couldn't say enough good things about it, and I'm recommending it highly. And Jazz, why don't you go first?
Absolutely. This is a really unique storyline. It's a very unique script, and it sounds like it's also something that might have presented a lot of challenges in terms of, you know, where you're going to shoot, how you weave the whole thing together. What were some of the challenges you ran into in actually shooting the film?
Well, we shot, just to give people background, we shot the movie in Jordan, we, you know, I wrote the script to be set in Jordan initially, from the beginning. And I was doing the many, 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 many rewrites, over a span of a year and a half, I would visit Jordan, because I live in Los Angeles, but I would visit Jordan. And every time I went there, I would kind of explore, do some location scouting, and found an opportunity to really, really explore the city through the movie and make the city into a character, much like many of the other characters in the film. Because there's such a rich terrain in Amman, the city, the capital of Jordan. And so you get like these beautiful Roman ruins where Abu Ra'id sits and tells the stories underneath these giant columns that are, you know, 2,000 years old. And then you've got the desert terrain, which has been, you know, captured in films like Lawrence of Arabia and whatnot. But, you know, normally people don't associate Jordan with city terrain, so I wanted to really explore the long stairs, the old architecture, the relatively new, you know, 100-year-old architecture that's new compared to the ancient stuff. So as I was doing all these rewrites, I really tried to incorporate the things that I was finding in the city and outside the city to film, to capture the hills and, you know, the different colors of Amman.
I can understand why that was so challenging, because you really hadn't filmed a feature movie and you were having to take into consideration all of the aspects of making a full-length film.
And doing it in another country, Betty Jo. That just as a quick
follow-up. Yeah.
You live in L.A. You're obviously experienced with the industry out here. Did you notice any differences? Is there trouble getting, like, you know, permits, problems with the government to film? Is that different than working here, perhaps?
It's actually a lot easier because there is not a film. There hadn't been a film industry in Jordan. This is kind of the first time that you see something like this come out of Jordan. There had been films that shot in Jordan, like Hollywood films that came and shot in Jordan. But really, this was treated with a lot of respect. I mean, we were able to shoot in a live-functioning airport, that it would be a nightmare to shoot in a live airport in L.A. to try to get permits to do something like that. But we got
right.
That. The government had founded the Royal Film Commission of Jordan, and they were really instrumental in basically giving us a green light to shoot anywhere we wanted in the city and outside, and they were really helpful. So in that sense, no, I had done 25 short films before Captain Abu Ra'id, many of them set in the States, in LA. And, you know, you have to get permits, go through different procedures that are much more complicated. It's almost like there's bureaucratic procedures that we didn't have to go through over there. So it was actually in that sense easier. On the other hand, there were challenges with the, like, some equipment we didn't have, so we had to kind of invent the wheel or reinvent the wheel on things like a fixer vehicle
yeah.
where we were carrying the, you know, pulling the car, pulling the bus, and all these things. We had to kind of make up our own designs for things like that. And then we also had to bring in some crew and equipment from the U.S. and other parts of the Arab world, like Lebanon and Morocco and Tunisia and whatnot.
Wow,
it had a great.
I wonder if that's going to prompt a whole bunch of Americans to go over and start making films there. If it's such a, you know, fertile place.
Yeah, we had a really good time. It was really fun.
It has a great look. Yep, it has a great look to it. I wanted to be sure and mention that it's almost an old-fashioned look to it, but still, the production values are very up to date, and I'm not sure how you accomplished that, but I was so happy to see a movie, an entire movie, without jerky camera and car chases and explosions. I mean, it was just such a treat to see a movie like this. AJ, you've seen the film. What would you like to know, first of all, about this movie from Amin?
Well, first of all, let's start off with the title character, because watching the movie, I kind of had it in my mind, like sort of comparing it to how American films would do it, and I really like that you sidestepped a lot of cliches with the character, where it becomes more about like the character and the gravitas instead of like the actions that he does. So what I'd like to ask you is, how would you describe the character of Abu Rayyad?
Okay, well, that's a loaded question. I'll start with the inspiration, maybe. My grandfather, who was 93 years old, had passed away in 2005. That's the year I started writing the film. And much of the inspiration, like I like to say the innocence of Abu Rayyad, is inspired by my grandfather. At the same time, I also grew up on Charlie Chaplin's films, like just loving, you know, the character of the tramp. And my producer, David Pritchard, when he said, why don't you make a Jordanian film? He said, make something that would, if Charlie Chaplin were alive, he'd love to be in. And that's really the inspiration for the character. You know, he's the everyman, the kind of the guy on the street that you don't notice, you know. But his arc, you know, is heroic, and his actions ultimately are heroic. But something else that that I really like about the movies that I love, and I think this is something with a lot of people, is we watch movies multiple times, not so much for the plot, you know. I mean, there's of course a big plot in the film here, but I think the reason we watch movies over and over is because of the characters. Like we connect with their behavior or their behavior under certain circumstances. And I think that's, I mean, I've seen the movie so many times now, and I've met people who've seen it at festivals in different places, and they've seen it multiple. Some people have seen it multiple times, and I'm always curious why we watch movies again and again. And I think it's because of character, not so much because of plot. You know, once you know the plot, you know the plot. But it's how people behave and how they inspire. You know.
Exactly. I agree with you 100% on like the innocence being the key for the character, because just this past weekend I saw this Spanish film that just got a remake not that long ago in America, and I liked the Spanish film better just because I didn't know who any of the actors were, so I was able to identify them more as the characters than instead of, oh wait, I know that guy from that movie, and then the illusion is kind of ruined. So I definitely appreciate how, like, I didn't know anybody in this movie, so I got to know them better instead of letting the star quality just overpower the character.
But
yeah,
wasn't the...
Go ahead.
Well, I just was so amazed at the intensity and compassion that the actor playing the lead character got into that character. Now,
yeah.
I think I have seen him before, maybe in Syriana, is that?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. He's someone, Nadim Sawalha, who played Abu Rayyad. He lives in London, actually. He's Jordanian, but he's been in London for 50 years, and he's acted in a lot of movies as, you know, he was Sean Connery's sidekick in The Wind and the Lion, you know, and he's been... Yeah, he was in Syriana. He was the king in Syriana, and he's been in a lot of Pink Panther films and The Spy Who Loved Me. So he's someone that we've seen in many, many different older films, but this was his first time where he played the leading character. Pretty much the whole movie is about him. And I have to say, I met Nadim. This is an interesting story. I met Nadim when I was 15 or 16 years old. I was going to Jordan. I was living in Ohio at the time, but my father was a pilot, and he was flying an airplane from London to Jordan. I was spending my summer in Jordan. It was 1993, I think. And And on board the plane with him was the cast and crew from The Son of the Pink Panther. They were going to Jordan to film a few scenes in Petra and around a few other locations. And my dad had heard that Nadim Sawalha, this actor who is known in Jordan, was on the airplane. So he told him, you know, he invited him to the cockpit, and he told him that my son wants to make movies when he grows up. And Nadim said, well, bring him over to the set, you know. So he invited me to the set, and I went and met him, and he gave me this, like, wonderful hug. And took me around, introduced me to Blake Edwards, who was directing the film, and Roberto Benigni, who was still unknown in the U.S. at the time. And I really never forgot how warm and just kind he was. And we didn't stay in touch. Like, 14 years later, when I wrote this film, I thought of him, and I got his number from Jordan, and from someone in Jordan, and I called him up, and I said, Mr. Sawalha, I don't know if you'd remember me, but I visited the set of your film when you were, you know, of The Pink Panther, when you were filming in Jordan. And he said, yes, you're the son of the pilot. And he remembered me. So I sent him the script, and he loved it, and that's how he came on board the film.
That is a
great
story.
He was just so gracious, so warm, so lovable, you know.
Well, he was so great in this film. I think that this character is one of the most admirable ones I've seen on screen in a long time. And
yeah.
I mean, the happiness that showed in his face when he was telling stories to the children. As
yeah.
well as when he was concerned for them. It just came across as
yeah.
totally genuine.
Great.
I just thought I was watching real life. But I interrupted AJ. I'm sorry. I know you have another question about the movie. So go ahead, AJ.
Okay. People have seen the movie know that Captain Abu Raid is only part of the equation, because a big part of the movie involves children. So where did you find the child actors for the movie, and what was it like working with them?
Yeah, that's another big one. The kids came from six different Palestinian, most of the kids, there's a dozen kids in the film, and what I call the disciples of Abu Raed.
good one.
they came from six different refugee camps, Palestinian refugee camps, in Amman and outside of Amman. And they had no acting experience before, and they're all between 12 years, you know, 10, some are 10 years old, some are 12 years old, some are 13. And the chubby kid was 7 when we filmed the film, but he looked much older than he was. But I wanted to kind of really find special gifted kids who have this raw quality to them that you can't ask someone to act out. You know, there's a realness to them. And it's all in the eyes. I mean, so much of this film is about people's eyes, you know. What
yeah.
you see in a kid's eyes, what you see in Abrad's eyes, what you see in Noor, the female pilot, in her eyes. So we met about 200 kids. This is about a year before we started filming. We started interviewing kids. And one of them, who ends up playing Murad, the who initially is an antagonistic kid in the film and actually turns out to be a very special person to Abu Raed and Abu Raed's influence on him. But another interesting story. We were at this one of the refugee camp summer camps, and we went in. They didn't know, none of the kids knew why we were there, and I was kind of role-playing. I was there to find, you know, just meet kids. And we had the video camera rolling, and I was just role-playing with each individual kid and bringing them in, and they didn't know, you know, what the movie was about or anything. They just knew that I was going to ask them questions and get to know them a little bit and improvise with them. And so I would ask each kid, I would say, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they'd answer like doctor or engineer or, you know, very typical answers that I don't think any of them had really given much thought, but those are kind of the traditional answers you kind of give when, you know, you want to impress someone. And then here comes this kid who looked just very frail and vulnerable, and his eyes were very deep, and he actually had something really special about him. And I said, what do you want to do when you grow up? And he said, I want to be a pilot. And immediately that was like an omen, like a sign from God saying, this is your boy. And it's a very difficult role because he has a pretty huge arc in the film, the character of Murad. You know, he goes from being an angry kid to a kid who has a difficult time to communicate with this older man who, I mean, the setup of the movie is about how he tells them stories, but that's just the setup. Most of the film is about how he, you know, intervenes into the problems in their everyday lives and how he, you know, ultimately becomes a heroic figure to one or two of the kids.
Yes, and so, the boy that you're talking about was, I mean, they were all delightful, but this boy that you're talking about did stand out.
Yeah.
He did stand out in the cast, and when you talk about so much of the movie being told through the eyes of the characters, you could just see the pain in that character's eyes throughout.
And when he smiles, you just, you know, when he finally smiles, it's so earned. You know, we've been longing for this for a long time. So, and I'm going to go back and work with them again. I'm in touch with them, you know, over the phone when I go to Jordan, I see them and all this. We're going to make more movies together in the future.
That's going to add a whole new challenging element. A couple of technical questions for you. I mean, one, just from a film perspective, what did you do it primarily? Was it film? Was it digital? Was it a combination? And the second part, if you could speak to us about the music, which is always such a big part of filmmaking. How closely did you work with the composer, and how did that factor into your process?
Yeah. Well, we shot the movie digitally on the Arri D20 camera, which it's not video, it's digital cinema, and it's a film body, film lenses. But because there were no labs in Jordan for film, we had to kind of take the minimal risk approach and shoot digital. And then we finished the movie on 35mm at Photochem here in L.A., and we did all the post-production in Los Angeles, and the budget for the whole movie was about $2 million, but it went a long way over there. As far as the music, which is one of my favorite subjects to speak about because I'm a huge film score aficionado. I've pretty much been collecting film scores for the last 20 years, and it's kind of my obsession. My heroes are the film composers, Michael Kamen, John Williams, you know, Jerry Goldsmith, those guys. And in fact, I dedicated the movie to Michael Kamen and Basil Poledouris, along with my grandfather, Michael Kamen, who did the score for Robin Hood, and Basil Poledouris, who did the music for Hunt for Red October and those films. Both were huge influences on me, and they both passed away at their prime, unfortunately. And actually, Michael Kamen was an influence on me, and also I wrote him a fan letter one day, and he called me up in return and invited me to London to go watch them. That's a long story, but you know, just the effect of people that you would never imagine they can have on your life is pretty, it resonates through with me. So anyways, the composer for the film is actually from Denver, but he you know, we met in L.A. His name is Austin Wintry, and very, very talented and incredible composer. We got an orchestral, a big giant orchestral score, performed by the Hollywood Studio Symphony Orchestra, which we wanted the score to be a universal score, not a particularly Arabic score, because I wanted, from the beginning, I wanted to make the film for a global audience, not just for it's not an art house film, it's a commercial kind of movie, but with certain art house sensibilities, if you will. But for me, the music was essential, that it could be something, because it's an emotional film, I wanted it to kind of convey the beauty and the innocence of childhood and the wonder of, you know, the sweep of the orchestra. I mean, it's just a beautiful score. And Austin scored the movie in 3 weeks because we were under big time pressure to deliver the movie for Sundance. And he blew me away. I mean, probably the coolest days of my life was showing up at Warner Brothers for the actual day of recording. You know, we had 2 days to record the score, and seeing the orchestra and hearing bits and pieces of them just kind of doing sight reading, rehearsing before we started recording, and hearing them practice material that we, Austin and I, were just bouncing off of his keyboard for the 3 weeks prior to recording. And you know, the way he works is he does these mock-ups of the score, and on his you know, in his studio on the computer and on the keyboard, and then he orchestrated everything, and then he was conducting the score.
Do you think some of those lines are blurring lately between art house films and mainstream films, particularly with the success of Slumdog and some other things? I mean, are those distinctions starting to go away, you think? There's more of an opportunity for people who are outside of the formulaic mainstream?
I think, yeah, I think people are, the world is getting smaller, and I think people are hungry for not just seeing the same cookie-cutter movies that the studio
exactly.
seems to just, yeah, I think people are, like, the success of Slumdog Millionaire is a perfect example of that. They want to see things that, and we've been, like, compared to Slumdog, ever since Slumdog came out, it's, like, been one of those things that just keeps coming up is, people want to come out with emotional experiences, or they want to be entertained, but they also want to feel something when they go to movies, or at least I do. And
I
it
think
seems
you're
like
right.
The, yeah. And I think
you're
if you
right
give them something special, then it doesn't matter where the movie's coming from.
Absolutely.
No, and you did such a beautiful.
People that don't want to see the same old romantic comedy 50 times over again every year, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go to those anymore. They're, you know, been there, done that. They're just
right.
There.
Yeah, well, Jazz, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just had to break
Sorry.
In and give a big compliment to Amin and Austin Wintery for the work they did together. It really, really paid off. This is one of the most beautiful scores. The background music enhanced the film, and it didn't interfere
yeah.
with the flow of the film at all, so congratulations on that. And, you know, we've gone half, we're over half of the show is over with, and we haven't checked with Nikki to find out what's happening in the chat and if there are any questions or comments from the chatters that she'd like to share with us. Nikki, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Yes,
is really
there
been,
any?
We've just really been enjoying the show, and everybody just thinks that maybe modern Hollywood films are just outright predictable, but his might not be. So.
Well, we have some perceptive chatters.
We do. I have to agree.
I know. So I'm wondering if we could ask Amin, where people can see the film, because I think
yeah.
it's being released in various cities throughout the country. Am I right about that?
Yeah, exactly. It's finally just opening. It's playing in Seattle right now. It's opening up in, it opens in, first of all, it opens in a different city every week starting the end of this month. But the schedule is on the website captainfilm.com. So if some, you know, if you're, if you guys put a link or if anybody listening, if you go to captainfilm.com, you'll see the schedule, and it's going to be continually updated as we book the movie into more and more theaters. But it opens in major cities, starting with San Francisco on July 24th, and then Denver, I think July 31st, and then it goes to San Diego the first week of August, and then New York mid-August, August 14th. And then D.C., Boston, Palm Springs, and like two dozen cities. And if it does well in those initial releases, then it goes wider from there.
Well, we're
so
keeping
it,
our...
I expect that the film will be playing yeah, through the latter half of the summer into the fall, hopefully.
That's great. And that website, again, is www.captain, C-A-P-T-A-I-N, film... FILM.com. Is that correct?
They can see the they can see the trailer, and there's a bunch of material, photos, and all that.
Great.
That.
Well, it really is a worthwhile
right
site.
Now,
to,
it looks very good.
Yes, it really is a beautiful trailer too. Well, AJ, I don't want to neglect you. Do you have another question or two for Amin?
I do, and it seems like I've kind of gotten the loaded questions kind of bog you down with, but if
well,
you had to...
That's why you're the movie man, the mad movie man.
I know, I'm crazy enough to do this.
All right.
But I mean, it's like succinctly as you can, like what would you say is like the important message in your film?
Well, I don't like
it's a lot to ask you.
I don't like to preach or anything like that, but I mean a few things. First of all, I like the movie. I like that the movie is a little window, especially to the to the West audiences in the U.S. A little window into something that you almost never see in the news here. Normally, people turn on CNN and they see Arabs as a bunch of people waving guns in the air, I think it's very absurd that people have the perception that it's the Middle East is a hostile place with a bunch of terrorists. So, for one, here's a picture of real people that are like you and me here in the having their normal lives and the same same problems that we see all over the world that you find in the film. So that's kind of one of the things that that I hope people get from the film. And since it's played around the world, and it seems like people respond to that a lot, and they always find it very curious that, oh, this is a little window into a different world that exists. It's not what you see on the news. So that's one. And then the other is, like, people can connect. I mean, oftentimes we judge people by the wardrobe that we see them in, and we make very quick judgments. And here's a, reclusive kind of airport janitor that not many people connect with, and he has a chance to do something heroic in this film. If there's a call to adventure, a call to action, sometimes the least expected person can be that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, AJ.
Okay. I was just going to say, I definitely agree with you on the movie having the potential to open up the eyes of viewers who wouldn't normally watch movies like this, because, like, being as big into foreign film as I am, and up here I know a lot of people just don't want to watch foreign movies just because the subtitles kind of scare them away. But the thing I really like about your movie is that it does have that universal premise that no matter what the language is, you can understand it and be affected by it. So if there's any recent movie that'll kind of break through, I think this might be it.
I hope so. I think it has on the festival circuit. So I think that's proof that the movie has been circulating along festivals for the last year. And it's picked up 27 major awards in major cities here. So 7 of those are audience awards. So I think the satisfaction level is pretty high, and people seem very pleased when they come out of the film and they talk about it. So
AJ makes a really good point. Quentin Tarantino was the one, if I go back and check, who said that visual emotion overrides language. I was getting the background questions because I'm always delving into the technical aspects and also the history of the people. You've been doing this for a while. You had a lot of short films before this. What were your influences when you got into it? Who were your favorite filmmakers? What do you draw on?
Well, I mean, I mentioned Chaplin, but also Spielberg is huge on, influence on me ever since I was little. E.T. and, E.T. is probably one of my very, very, very favorite movies. I also love Giuseppe Tornatore, Cinema Paradiso. That's one of my favorite movies.
Ah.
I love the Coen brothers. Not everything, but like a lot of their films. I love humor. I love.
Everybody always says not everything with the Coen brothers. It's always risky
because
territory.
Because they've had hit and miss. Yeah, but I mean Fargo is amazing. You know.
Oh. Woo! We approve.
Okay. Good. Yeah, it's a masterpiece. Scorsese, of course. There's so many. Kurosawa from the Japanese, and Truffaut from the French cinema. I love Superman. I love the adventure films I grew up on. The Indiana Jones films, the Star Wars films, and So I've got a mixed bag of world cinema and American cinema as well.
And I think that your love of film shines through in this movie because it just, you know, and it tugs at the heart, too, and the message that it brings to all of us is one that is so appealing. It's just totally impressive. But do you know what? I mean, we've neglected one of the key members of the cast who happened to play Captain Abu Rad's accomplice in his heroic deeds.
Yeah.
And shame on us. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the woman who played the pilot and did it so well?
The beautiful Rana Sultan. Absolutely. Rana, who is, she doesn't come from an acting background. She plays Noor, the pilot. And actually, the idea that there's female pilots in Jordan is based on actual people. You know, I know of three female pilots in Royal Jordanian Airlines. Rana had her own TV show. She did the morning talk show every Friday morning in Amman. And when my mother read the script, she said, because I live in the States, I didn't know the show, but I didn't know her. I knew of the show. It's the most popular show on Jordan television. Mm. My mother said, you have to see Rana Sultan, and she's perfect for Noor. That's when my mother read the script. And I said, well, is she TV? Because I'm not, I wasn't a big fan of TV actors in Jordan. And she said, no, it's different. Just go on the internet. So I looked her up, and she's stunningly gorgeous, just beautiful big eyes, and just, you know. But when I called her, I said, I'm interested in giving you a script for a movie that we're going to make. And she said, I have no interest in acting. I'm not an actress. And I said, but just let me send you the script, and maybe you'll hear me out. And so I sent her the script, and the next day I called her to follow up, and she had read it, and she said that she loved it. And so we met, and both me and David Pritchard, my producer, we both met with Rana, and instantly we recognized her down-to-earth qualities and her every day. She has this Sandra Bullock lovability, you know. You just instantly connect with her when you see her, she did a brilliant, brilliant job. And the friendships that grew on the set and the humor, you know, throughout, especially between her and Nadim, was really fun to watch. Because Nadim, he made her feel very comfortable acting, because, you know, it's her first time acting in a movie or acting period. So it a lot of it comes from trust. And so that's...
I think you have the powers of persuasion, the way you're able to get everyone to join you in your film. And I thought she'd been acting, you know, for a long time, because she was so believable in your movie. I hope you work with her again.
We're trying to do more stuff together in the future. I'm cooking up a bunch of things. I'm going to go back to Jordan. My fiance is writing a really wonderful movie. I plan to go back and work with a bunch of the people that are in Captain Abu Ra'ed in a lighthearted romantic comedy set in Amman, modern kind of comedy.
Well, that you probably will have a lot of offers as soon as America sees this and the rest of the world sees this film, because you'll be much in demand. And you were a little bit too humble, I think, when you were talking. You said 27 awards. It's one on the festival circuit. That's a lot of awards. But you didn't mention that some of them are very, very prestigious awards. For example, the Sundance Audience Award for Dramatic World Cinema.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Grand Prize for Dramatic Feature at the Heartland Film Festival.
Yeah, that was enormous. That basically got me all out of my credit card debt that I was living on. Thank God for Heartland. God bless them.
Right. Well, now, will it still be showing at some film festivals, or now that it's going to be opening up in the in regular theaters.
Yeah, now it's regular theaters. I'm pretty sure it's done with the festival circuit, and now it's the grand poobah phase of the theatrical release.
Well, I think it should do well, and all of us we will definitely be encouraging people to go see Captain Abu Rod. And I have the last question. AJ and Jazz have had most of the questions, but the last one belongs to me, and it's a question we ask all of our guests, and it's, what's the most important thing you want people to know about you and your work?
Good question. The most important thing I'd like for people to know about me and my work, gosh, I guess I'll let the work speak for itself. They'd have to see the film and maybe follow my career as I try to make films. But I try to make movies that are original and that might make a slight difference in the world, maybe just a little bit, if I can do my part, so that if my movies or me doing what I do can affect someone, then it's very satisfying to think that ultimately we're all one big family of human beings, and we have to, try to do good things to influence each other. So,
well, good luck to you. We'll be seeing you at the Oscars, I'm sure.
That's a wonderful answer. I am so sorry that our time is almost up. I mean, and so I, on behalf of Jazz and Nikki and AJ and everyone at Blog Talk Radio, thanks so much for being such a great guest. We all wish you the best, and we know that you're going to have great success as a filmmaker. In fact, I think the last sentence in my review was that I believe this film marks the beginning of a beautiful friendship between Amin Matalka and discerning moviegoers everywhere. So thanks for being on our show. And
thanks for having me.
It's been our pleasure. This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support and connection with this show. Special thanks today to AJ Honkery for his help, as well as to Nikki Starr and Jazz Shaw for everything they do to make Movie Addict Headquarters such a treat to host. Thanks also to everyone who listened live or to the archives or took part in the chat. We really appreciate it. Please come back next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time for another lively discussion about movies. Our guest will be Jamie Masada from The Laugh Factory, who plans to talk about his experience working with some of Hollywood's funniest comics. In the meantime, don't forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. And also check out AJ's website, Passport Cinema. That's www.passportcinema.com. Now, as usual, here's the very talented AJ Daniels to close the show with a song dedicated to all our Blog Talk Radio listeners.
I don't. you, then you'd be forced to love me too. If you knew how much I adore you, you'd stay with me and be true.